Welcome back to Art Beat. This is Catherine Davis, and we are listening to art on the radio. My next guest is also a photographer, so we're sort of having a photography-themed show, but this is very different. The last two guests, the women who are showing at Verve Gallery of Photography, are, I think, they're about portraiture. Now, our next guest is Arthur Drucker, and he is in the Bay Area right now. Welcome, Arthur.
Hi, Catherine. How are you?
Very good. It's good to have you. Now, tell us where you are. Are you in San Francisco?
I'm in Mill Valley, which is just across the Golden Gate Bridge from San Francisco.
Great. Well, welcome to Santa Fe in a virtual way.
Thank you.
Now, you are opening a show at Patina Gallery, and Patina Gallery is downtown at 131 West Palace, and that show is opening tomorrow night. Will you be there?
I will, from 5 to 7 p.m. I invite everybody to come.
Great. And their phone number is 986-3432. You can always find them online at patina-gallery.com or just Google Patina Gallery. Now, Arthur, your work is a really nice combination and juxtaposition of trash. And of course, I wanted to use that word on purpose because that idea trash does give us that sense of that's not art. Trash is not art, is it? But the way that you compile it or you find it in these beautiful compositions and then you photograph it is really lovely. And I wanted to ask you, and hence the name Heavy Metal, because there are pictures of compressed bales of scrap metal, cars, etc. Tell us how you arrived at this point.
Well, it happened over a number of years. Many years ago, I think actually when I was in college, I was first exposed to John Chamberlain's sculpture.
Yes.
And
the
as
crushed
I'm sure a lot
car
of,
parts.
Right, exactly. And perhaps for your listeners who aren't aware, unfortunately, John Chamberlain is no longer with us, but the work he's best known for is how welded sculpture made of scrap metal and typically car parts. And it really made a big impression on me. And I thought it would be nice at some point to do what I would call a photographic equivalent of what John Chamberlain was doing with sculpture. Now, of course, sculpture is three-dimensional, photography is two-dimensional, but I still thought there was a way, as you mentioned in your introduction, to sort of find the art, so to speak, in the trash.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, I wanted to just briefly footnote this idea of equivalence. We have Alfred Stieglitz, who was making the cloud equivalent. So there's this idea of making equivalents across mediums, transitioning from your inspiration of sculpture, say John Chamberlain's sculpture, to what does that look like in a two-dimensional photograph?
Right. And I think even it can be reduced even further to this notion of taking what a lot of people think of as junk or trash and trying to find some beauty in it. And I think that's where the sculptor, the artist, the photographer comes into play, is how can you look at this and reinterpret it in a way that the audience, the viewer would say, you know, I never saw it that way. I never knew that that was in there.
Right. And so, you call yourself an urban explorer. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about one of the places you photograph in the Bay Area is the Schnitzer facility, and they have everything from discarded cans, abandoned cars, old refrigerators, and other recyclable materials, and they've been sheared and shredded and crushed, and so they what comes out of that are stacks and piles or bales of these elements, and they're surprisingly vibrantly colored photographs that you're producing.
Thank you. Well, as it turns out, I lucked into being the first photographer that Schnitzer Steel allowed on the premises of their massive recycling facility on the Oakland waterfront. I got there through a little bit of a circuitous route. I had mentioned my interest in wanting to initially photograph flattened, pancaked cars.
Uh-huh.
Because, again, that goes back to the John Chamberlain influence. I think most of his sculptures were made of car parts.
Right.
So I thought, okay, well, let me find some flattened pancake cars that you typically would see at a recycling facility.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned this to a friend in the Bay Area, and she suggested I go to Pick and Pull, which is a chain of, it's a salvage yard chain.
Right.
And I called the local Pick and Pull, not far from me, and they suggested I contact their corporate headquarters, and it turns out that Schnitzer Steel owns Pick and Pull.
Mm-hmm.
So through someone who was very supportive at Pick and Pull, I was put in touch with the public relations person at Schnitzer Steel in Oakland, and she was very supportive of the project, and she got permission from her bosses, and that's how I basically lucked into being the first photographer allowed in there. So I used the term urban explorer because I felt, in some ways, I was going into some uncharted territory, even though it's, you know, right there in Oakland.
But, yeah, there's always treasures right under our noses that we've
yes.
never really noticed before.
Right.
I wanted to ask you as well what your photographic process is. I'm looking at a piece in the catalog that Ivan Barnett of Patina Gallery sent me, and I'm looking at the piece titled Stack, which is exactly what we were talking about, stacks of pancake cars on
right.
each other. And the colors are really, as I've said before, really vibrant. They really hint at the vitality of cars in our car culture in the West and what they used to be like, how they used to vroom, vroom around. And there's bright, kind of almost like a candy apple red. There's a
mm-hmm.
lime green. There's a beautiful deep blue color. How do you, what's your process? You go out there and make photographs.
Right. Well, it's really very simple. A lot of it really comes down to light.
Mm-hmm.
Getting the best light on something and being patient and just keeping your eyes open. I mean, you know, the word process sometimes connotes something very complicated, but when you're a photographer, it's at least from my perspective, a lot of it is about photographing whatever it is at the right moment. And for me, it really comes down to light. And think of the word photographer. It's basically
writing in light.
So in the case of the photograph you mentioned, and actually for all the photographs that are in the show and in the catalog, when I would schedule time with my contact at Schnitzer Steel, even after a while, she got to realize that, okay, that's a morning shot, that's an afternoon shot, depending on where in the yard we were going to go and what time of day would most likely be best to photograph. And the photograph you mentioned, Stack, that was one of the first photographs I made at Schnitzer because,
uh-huh.
again, with the John Chamberlain influence,
right.
that's what I was really looking for. And it wasn't until I got to Schnitzer Steel, got the stack shot out of the way, so to speak, that I looked around and saw, oh, wait a minute, there's a lot more here than just, you know, stacked pancake cars.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, basically my process, which is the right light, being in the right place at the right time.
Which every photographer hopes and dreams for.
Right. And then the other thing, too, is that talking about process, and I know I'm not alone in this one. I know a lot of other photographers probably feel the same way. It's not all about what is in the frame. It's also about what you leave out.
Right.
So if you notice that stack shot, it's a very tight shot. I was very specific about what it was
uh-huh.
I wanted to photograph. Other photographers might have shot up perhaps a little wider, what have you, depending on what their vision is of a project. But for me, it's just as much about what to leave out, and what's left in the frame is the essential of what you want to see and what you want people to see.
Right. That's a really good point, and that is especially important, or became important, as photography developed into, photograph pun, developed into being considered a fine art, and the cropping of photographs really influenced painters. That starts as early as with the Impressionists, and certainly Georgia O'Keeffe is influenced not only by Stieglitz, but by the other photographers around her to crop her subject matter in such a way that it brings on the right sensation that she's trying to achieve. And it's similar, that question of what do you leave out, which photographers deal with, is a similar question or a corollary to the painter's question: how do I know when I'm done? How do I know when to stop?
Well, for me, it's a visceral feeling.
Uh-huh.
You know, it feels right, and it's actually a physical sensation. It's the aha moment. It's like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost equate it to music, because after I make a photograph and I look at, I shoot digitally, and when I look at the results on the screen, I don't say it works. I say it sings.
Mm.
Because it's not just about the thing itself. There's a little bit of a transporting aspect to it, that it's not just the pancake cars in this particular case. It's the pancake cars are composed in a way that it hopefully takes the viewer someplace else other than the literal viewing of the image. Aha, that's a stack of cars. Well, yes. But if I'm doing my job right, there's something else going on there that is accessible to the viewer.
Mm-hmm. And I like the way I have another image in front of me to use as an example. It's radiator bale.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way that by focusing in on your subject instead of taking the wide view, focusing and narrowing in on it, these radiators that have been crushed together in a bale take on a very organic look. They look like living things. They could have come out of the sea.
Well, I'm so glad you said that, because to me it looks like a squished octopus in a tank.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it does. It looks like his arms are stuck on the tank walls.
Right.
And he's looking at you.
Yes.
Only you can't find his head.
Right. It's back there somewhere.
It's beautiful work. And then we have the license plate bale, which is full of California license plates all mashed up into one.
See, to me that was a whiff of Jasper Johns, the way he would play with letters and numbers.
Right,
and
with text on the canvas.
Right. So there was a little bit of that going on in that particular photograph.
I see that. I definitely see that. Now, I think what we'll do is we'll take a break right now, Arthur, and when we come back, I also want to talk about, you call yourself a New Mexico, California artist. I want to talk about your experiences in New Mexico, and particularly your recently published book, Pietown Revisited, and the influences of the Depression era photographers on the way you look at things. So we will be right back, Arthur, and all of you listeners out there. We're just going to take a quick break and return.
Now back to Artbeat with your host, Catherine Davis.
Welcome back. This is Catherine Davis, and my guest right now via the telephone is Arthur Drucker, a photographer whose show Heavy Metal is opening tomorrow night at Patina Gallery on West Palace. Welcome back, Arthur.
Thank you.
And we are speaking to you from Mill Valley. Well, we're speaking to you from Santa Fe, and you're in Mill Valley. Just wanted to get that in there. I wanted to ask you, now you have recently, with University of New Mexico Press, published what looks to be a wonderful little book, Pietown Revisited. And before we get into that, I'd like for you to talk about that book. I noted, I think from your website, that you were very influenced by the Depression era photographers from the FSA, Dorothea Lange, for example. And I like this quote of Russell Lee's, that these photographs conveyed to people who were out of hope, homeless, just in bad straits, as Russell Lee said, he wanted to convey that they matter. this sense of you matter. Mm-hmm. I think that's very beautiful. Can you talk about how that's influenced you?
You mean FSA photography? I was first exposed to FSA photography when I was a teenager, a fledgling photographer, and it really made a profound impact on me.
And let's get down to basics. The FSA is the agency, it's one of FDR's programs, like the WPA.
Right.
What is FSA? It's Farm?
It stands for the Farm Security Administration.
There you go. Thank you.
And it was part of the Department of Agriculture. And it was initially designed to help poor farmers. Mm-hmm. And FDR was very intent on getting his New Deal programs passed through Congress. And to help him do that, he basically approved the establishment of a photography unit within the FSA to go around the country and documenting the effects of the Great Depression as well as the Dust Bowl, because a lot of farmers were affected by that, and basically use this as visual evidence for the need for these New Deal programs. That was the initial reason for this, but I have to say a lot of people will agree that the FSA archive has become not only to represent iconic images of that particular era, but also it became a foundation of the genre of documentary photography, photojournalism, and the FSA photographers, Dorothea Lange, like you mentioned, Walker Evans, Gordon Parks, Russell Lee, and several others, they've become extremely influential. And when I first saw FSA photography as a teenager, it just bowled me over, not only in terms of the subject matter, the emotion of it, the documentation of it, and the historical importance of it, but as a fledgling photographer, I thought, oh, this could be interesting, you know, the idea of photographers traveling around to interesting places, taking photographs, meeting people, that whole way of life was planted in me by looking at FSA photography, to the point that as a teenager, I sort of vaguely promised myself that at some point in my life, I wanted to go to a place that an FSA photographer had visited and see what it's like now and photograph it now. And years later, after being a teenager, years later, I came across Russell Lee's color photographs that he made in Pytown in 1940. Uh-huh. Most of the FSA photographs are black and white. And color film was introduced in 1937, Kodachrome. And so it was a pretty new film stock by 1940 when Russell Lee happened to come to Pytown. And a lot of FSA photographers were a little wary of color photography, especially Walker Evans. He even used the term vulgar to describe color film. He thought it should be just relegated for commercial purposes, advertising, that sort of thing.
Elliot Porter had a similar problem with color.
Right. But Russell Lee, he was an engineer by background. He didn't have those kinds of high art pretensions, you know, at least as expressed in that time. And he was more than willing to try color film. So he made about 70 or so photographs in Pytown, and I saw those several years ago, and it all came together for me because his color photographs of homesteaders in Pytown living essentially like 19th century pioneers, the whole thing was just wonderfully dissonant to me. Color photography, homesteaders living like 19th century pioneers, it's 1940, so I thought, of all the places that FSA photographers have been to, I think I found my destination, Pytown.
Pytown. And can you give us a brief review of the history of Pytown, how it got its name?
Pytown got its name from a gentleman named Clyde Norman, who was a gentleman from Texas who came to that part of New Mexico, which is about 160 miles southwest of Albuquerque, basically in the middle of nowhere, along the Continental Divide. And he had a mining claim in that particular area. And to help subsidize his mining claim, he opened a garage to fix cars and to sell items, including snacks, for motorists who were driving by on US 60, which was basically a dirt road at the time. And among the things he sold was, I think it was cookies or something from a local baker. And the local baker found out and said, "Hey, make your own baked goods. You know, don't resell mine." So as a teenager, Clyde Norman had learned how to make pies from his mother. So, and he started making pies from dried apples that he found on the ground, basically, in that area of New Mexico. And people loved his pies. And, you know, it went from becoming, Clyde Norman's Garage to Pie Town.
Right.
And settlers started moving in that area, and it came time to establish a post office. And the officials in Washington looked askance at Pie Town, really? And the people in Pie Town said, "Look, it's Pie Town or No Town." So they prevailed, and it's been Pie Town, New Mexico, ever since 1927, I believe.
That's fabulous. And,
yeah.
Congratulations on this book. I really look forward to seeing it. You say, now it says in the press release, which of course you probably didn't write, but Ivan or whoever wrote the press release for Patina Gallery calls you a New Mexico, California artist. Where do you live when you're in New Mexico?
Galisteo.
Oh, uh-huh.
My wife has a second home out there. And one of the ancillary benefits of marrying her was being able to spend more time in New Mexico at her second home in Galisteo. So we come out once a month, anywhere from a quick visit to a week or so at a time, about 8 or 9 months out of the year. So we'll be there, obviously, this weekend, because in addition to the opening at Patina Gallery for Heavy Metal, we're also going to be doing a couple of book signings for Pie Town Revisited. There's going to be one on Saturday at Collected Works at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
And I've been telling people, come for the book, stay for the pie, because Kathy Knapp, the pie lady of Pie Town.
Oh, will be wow, the pioneer?
Yes, the Pie Lady of Pie Town. She will be in attendance with pies that she has baked expressly for the book signing.
How fun.
Yes.
And that's at Collected Works on Saturday at 2.
Correct.
And the book is put out by UNM Press. It was designed by David Chicky, who we love. He's brilliant. Arthur, thank you so much. I look forward to meeting you tomorrow night at Patina Gallery for the opening of your show, Heavy Metal.
Thank you, Catherine.
You're welcome. And this is Artbeat. I will be back next week.